Hello, change makers, green lighters, intimacy junkies, life givers, and life savers. I am Brooke Warner, and this week's episode is brought to you in conjunction with the San Francisco Writers Foundation, Writing for Change. I'm on my own this week because this is another one of those interviews where we are sending you out an interview that I did previously. In this case, I participated with the San Francisco Writers Foundation to interview Michelle T back in September. From time to time, we're going to bring you these special interviews, and I'm really honored to have had the opportunity to interview Michelle. For those of you who know Michelle T and her work, you know what a special human being and writer she is. And for those of you who don't know who she is, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my personal connection to her. When I first started working at Seal Press in 2004, Michelle was already a celebrated author, and she had published two books with Seal Press by the time that I started there: Valencia, her memoir in 2000, and then later The Chelsea Whistle in 2004. And I knew Michelle as this edgy, energetic, super plugged in to a particular SF writing scene, which was the LGBTQ crowd mainly. Michelle's books are known for their exposition of the queer community, and she has written a lot of memoir, and a lot of her fiction is autofiction. And so she was super involved in the spoken word scene in San Francisco. And in the years that I was at Seal Press, I went to a number of her Sister Spit events in the San Francisco Public Library. And I loved every single person I saw speak or perform there. And so this interview that you're going to listen to today was focused on the idea that memoir can be a method for change. And I certainly believe this to be true. In preparation for the interview, the San Francisco Writers Foundation had asked me to write a blog post on this topic. And so I just want to share a little section from it in which I wrote, "Whether you're writing or reading, memoir can set you free. It's a method for change for writers and readers alike. Writing memoir will change your life in supporting you to better understand what you've lived through. If you allow it to, the process will increase your compassion, even toward those who hurt you. Reading memoir is a looking glass into others' lives. It might make you feel more grateful. Perhaps it shines light on disparities, injustices, and the many isms that stand in people's way. Maybe it saves you, because in the memoirist you see yourself, and they offer you a way through to the other side." So this is what I love about memoir. I do believe that the act of reading it and writing it sets people free. Michelle T has been writing memoir for more than 20 years. She is about my age, by the way, so she started young. She's one of the OGs, an indie darling who never hit the mainstream. You know, she's got a cult following more than a mainstream following, and that's partly because she's never compromised who she is. She's published on feminist imprints and small presses. She's told the stories that she wants to tell, and God love her for it. She's given permission to thousands of readers to be who they authentically are, to embrace life on their own terms, to be brilliant in their messy creative selves. And I've admired Michelle T for a really long time, and I feel a particular sisterhood connection to her because of Seal Press. Those years I spent at Seal Press were some of the most formative of my life. They made me a feminist. They shaped my thinking and my values, and Michelle T was a part of that. So for the formal bio of who Michelle is, here's that part. Michelle T is the author of over a dozen books for kids, teens, and grownups. Her memoir, Valencia, winner of the Lambda Literary Award, is a cult classic and was made into an experimental feature film with 21 different directors. Her essay collection, Against Memoir, won the Pen America Diamondstein Spielvogel Award. It's a mouthful. For the art of the essay, and is very much worth reading. I hope you will read it, actually. In this interview, Michelle chose two books to focus on: her newest work of autofiction, which is called Black Wave, and her personal essay collection that I love a lot called Against Memoir. I hope you enjoy the interview after this short break. So, Grant, regular listeners know that we love using the Great Courses Plus because Great Courses ad copy says it keeps us learning about the world, but really it's because it makes us look smart and impressive. That's what I think anyway. So what is the most smart and impressive thing you have learned from a Great Courses Plus class recently?
Yeah, I love this as a motivation just to look smart and impressive. but I'm happy to say that one of the benefits of the pandemic, my pandemic lifestyle at least, has been indulging in great courses. So here are a few moments that made me look and feel smart. I actually listened to the course that analyzed the Bible a while back, and I was able to explain the story of Abraham to a friend when we were talking about the extremities of faith. I recently got to tell my son about the history behind the novel Frankenstein, how Mary Shelley wrote it as part of a competition one night with her future husband, Percy Shelley and Lord Byron, you know, so a pretty good storytelling crowd. And then on that note, I've recently been listening to a super cool course, How Science Shapes Science Fiction, because I love this kind of intersection of science and story.
Geez. And just from that little sampling, people can tell there are so many courses to discover. And it reminds me of my college days when I would excitedly look through the catalog of available classes and consider what my next weeks and months might look like. And the only problem with the Great Courses Plus, honestly, is that there is not enough time to take all the classes that I'm interested in, not even in a pandemic. So right now I am still watching those communism versus socialism classes. But I put in my queue a class called How to Grow Anything, Food Gardening for Everyone, because I am very interested in doing more gardening from home because I'm home more and because I think it would be something that would be fun for my son and I to do.
Yeah. And you will learn what you're supposed to be doing because the experts who teach these classes are top notch in their subject matter or field. And you can watch or listen from any device, which means you could watch it outside while gardening. And I can catch a lecture while I'm cooking dinner. And I even sometimes just listen to Great Courses without watching while I'm walking around my neighborhood with my dog Buster.
Yeah, and it's the perfect service for listeners of Right Minded because I know our listeners are curious and they're lifelong learners. So all of you out there, do not wait. Now is the perfect time to sign up. Start exploring with your free month trial today. And you just go to our special URL. So Grant, it's your time to roll out the special URL this time.
I kept waiting you for to sing this in verse, but I wish I could, but I'm not going to. I'll take the Great Courses singing course and maybe do it later. But the URL is thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded, right-minded, all one word, no hyphen. So remember, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded. Check it out.
Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Brooke.
Super happy to be with you. So I think we should give people a little context that basically when I started working at SEAL, it was 2004, and you had already published a number of books. I mean, I think Chelsea Whistle and Valencia were already out by the time that I got there. Yeah. And then during my time there, you did some anthologies. So you and I have the history of the connection through SEAL Press, which is awesome. And I love that you've published a lot of places, but another one of your primary publisher right now is the Feminist Press. So, so I want to start kind of in a big picture place about memoir. I mean, you write memoir, but you've also written a lot of fiction, and I would love for you to talk a little bit about autofiction and the line between the kind of memoir that you write and a lot of your fiction, which is autofiction, and maybe even define the difference for people.
Right. I mean, I feel maybe like I'm confused what the difference of these terms are to some extent. I mean, for me, when I'm writing memoir, I've really pushed myself to the challenge is to remember exactly what happened, get to some sort of truth or some sort of heart of the situation, and really like play with language to basically manipulate my reader, you know? So like, that's what I'm doing when I'm writing memoir, I guess is autofiction, sort of like, it's not memoir, so I can do what I want. Like my book Black Wave was definitely not memoir. There's tons of memoir in it. There's tons of things that really literally happened, as well as a lot of things that are emotionally true. But I also just went wild and conjured all this unreality to entertain myself, to protect myself, to get at truths in a way that seemed more attractive to me creatively than just telling my story. So
yeah. And so in Black Wave, the character is Michelle. I mean, anyone who reads it and who knows you can see all those places that are very familiar in your story. Yeah. And then, as you said, like you go out on a wild whim. And so what is the appeal? I mean, I think I know, but for you, what's the appeal of having that kind of freedom?
that book was a really weird book. I mean, it really was such an incredible experience. You know, I had been trying to write a straight up apocalyptic novel, like not with me in it, just a novel. I was interested in like telling an apocalyptic story. And then I had this really big breakup with this relationship that I'd been in for 8 years and that I didn't feel like I could write about while I was in it. Cause you kind of can't do that if you want to stay in it, generally speaking. So right. Once I was sort of, the trauma of the breakup and all the heightened emotions and feelings, I really wanted to write about it. And so I started doing that. And, I started just keeping these, I felt like it was an emotional apocalypse that was happening. So it felt appropriate. And I just felt like I had been enjoying writing the fiction, but now I felt really compelled to put my own story in it. And I was like, can I even do this? Is this real? Like, does this count? And I just sort of started blending it. And it got weirder because when my ex found out I was doing it, he was really upset and he didn't want me to write about him, or at least the things I had written. And I mean, what's new, who cares, generally speaking. But for some reason, we'd been kind of a public couple because he was also a performer. And I was like, oh God, I'm going to end up being sort of in the public eye attached to him in this way for longer if I do this book in this way. And suddenly it seemed like it was in my own best interest for the first time ever to not write about my life in this way. And so, I kind of pulled him out of it and kept all this other stuff. And then I had all these gaps in the manuscript in which to insert more unreality and more apocalypse. And so it was the weirdest. Usually my process is very straightforward. It's like, this is what happened. This is the span I want to write about. I'll figure out different chunks of time. But this was totally a very strange process for me.
Well, it's very enjoyable. And I mean, it's experimental, but so readable. And that was really fun. So I appreciate that. I know it was, I mean, people, I bought and read the book. So I do want to share that I have them here when we talk about them. But what you just brought up, I mean, there's so much that we can and hopefully have time to cover in an hour, because you brought up trauma and writing about other people. And I think if you're having a conversation about memoir, all of these things that we're hoping to touch upon tonight are really, they're experienced by everyone who writes memoir, or they're scared about them in some way. Yeah. And so you've written a lot of really brutal stuff and also very open about things as wide ranging as addiction and prostitution. I mean, really, especially like your earlier stuff. And I wonder, was there anything in the beginning that felt off limits to you? And if not, how did you push through to share some of the like deepest, darkest stuff from your history?
Not much, if anything, felt off limits when I was younger, which is great. I mean, maybe now actually, but, you know, there was no internet when I was writing. So I felt very anonymous, certainly as like a queer, you know, person who just sort of landed in San Francisco. I didn't really go to college. I went for a couple semesters. I couldn't be less disconnected from like a publishing industry. Like I really felt like I was doing what I was doing sort of in a vacuum. And I think that that gave me a lot of freedom. Also the fact that I was right, that I was, the only people who were hearing it were specifically queer people who were more or less like me, who were so excited that somebody was writing about our lives and about things that the larger world maybe felt like were controversial, like sex work. But in the 90s in San Francisco, like practically every other femme on the street was doing sex work. And so it was, and there wasn't such a glut of material about it as there is now. So I felt very free. I felt like I was preaching to the choir, which felt fine for me. I felt like, you know, I am like a very politically opinionated person, and I could recognize that there, even though my intention, my main compulsion to write wasn't to write political work, but I could see that there was a political dimension to it. And I really liked that. So that kind of gave me a little bit more bravado also. I was estranged from my family. I never thought anyone would see. I never thought I'd be published. I mean, it was totally the best case scenario in so many ways, for just like, just to be so free, because I didn't think anyone would ever read it. You know,
and it is, I mean, and that's interesting because of course it is freeing. And now all these books later, you're talking about the partner and his response to all of this. And yeah. I wonder now, I mean, now you have a son and there are considerations of being, you know, in a world where everything is much more accessible and there's so much out there. So if you were to give advice to your younger self, I mean, would you say do it all the same or?
Yeah, definitely. I would say like, listen, like the walls are slowly going to close in on this. So like get it all out while you can, because it felt so great to be able to do that and to write with such abandon and such bravado, you know, it felt really good. And now, yeah, I'm much more, you know, I'm going through a divorce and I'd love to write all about it. And, you know, I might in some way, I feel like, how can I not? But at the same time, you know, the person I'm divorcing is also my child's parent. And so I have to consider if I'm doing something to kind of publicly hurt or that winds up publicly hurting my ex, I could also be publicly hurting my child, if not now, maybe in 10 years, you know? So there's different considerations for sure. And, you know, my mother, like I've really put my mother through it with my writing. And on the one hand, I'm like, sorry, you had a writer kid. Like, that's just, you know, but at this point, I think that it does feel a little bit like, I don't know that I can keep doing it. You know, like it also makes me feel like, am I going to keep telling the same story about my mother for the rest of my life? But it's weird because if you, you know, like your story kind of, it morphs and changes and it continues as you live. So it's like, I could actually write a whole other book that has my mother featuring prominently in it, but she's literally moving in with me on Monday and I can't write about people I live with. So I probably will never write another word about my mother ever again.
There's a strategy for people not writing about you maybe is just to move in.
Move in. Yeah. Until you move out and then it'll all come out.
In Against Memoir, I loved this part where you were sharing, you'll have to remind me of the specific passage or book that you tell your students to read, because it's about this compulsion to write, you know, and that there's this, and I know this because I work with so many memoirists, people who really I'm going to purposely use the double negative here. They can't not write. And you seem like that kind of person. I mean, you're so prolific. You've published so many essays and books. Have you been able to kind of trace that compulsion? Is it just about making sense of your life or is it something else?
Honestly, for me, it feels like it's chemical. I wouldn't be surprised if it's to learn that it's somehow chemically connected to other compulsive drives that I experience in my human body and in my human self. You know, like I'm a sober addict alcoholic, and it's so interesting that when I learned that I love reading like about brain science for people who aren't scientists, you know, and they kind of break it down in these kind of simple ways where I'm like, is that real? But I want to believe it because it feels like true. The book you're talking about is called The Midnight Disease, and it was written by a neurobiologist, I believe, who had had a trauma. She had a miscarriage and suddenly became hypographic, where she couldn't stop writing about her own story. And so, you know, when I first started writing, I was totally kind of navigating a trauma in my family of learning that like my stepfather had been sort of passively abusing me and my sister in this creepy way, and our family fell apart. And I felt like my writing, even though I didn't necessarily want to write about that per se, and even though I've written my whole life, like since I was a kid, I've been writing, it just got so amped up in the wake of that. And so it really resonated to read this woman's experience about how that happened to her. And then I also read that the part of your brain that lights up when you do cocaine also lights up when you talk about yourself. So I was like, whoa, that's deep.
There's an addictive component to it, clearly. I mean, it's also, it does seem, I mean, you left Massachusetts and landed right in San Francisco and then had like all of these super intense experiences. And I like this idea of hypographic much better than trauma writing, because people talk about trauma writing and that it's like this looping thing. And I think sometimes people can get really stuck there, but you also mentioned this idea of like, well, you know, how much more is there to say? People know my story. So do you ever worry that you're running out of content, you know, or are you like, okay, we can always do these like apocalyptic, crazy experimental novels?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I do worry about it because even though I'm, you know, have written fiction, like my main compulsion is to write my own story. And it's just a compulsion that's in me. And when it's, when I'm able to really do it, it feels very enjoyable the way that, you know, feeding any compulsion does, I suppose. But yeah, I can't, not everything's interesting all the time, you know? I mean, on the one hand, I'm like, well, it's your job, you know, as a writer to do this, who's doing this kind of writing, maybe to make things that are more mundane interesting and kind of get, like, maybe that's a creative challenge, you know? So I'm torn about it. But yeah, I mean, it's like, and then sometimes I think, well, my gosh, you know, if you hear a band on the radio, a lot of times you can hear their sound, you can recognize what that band's sound is because they've got these certain patterns, you know, like these certain musical patterns that they express. And so am I expressing a sort of pattern, and is it expressed slightly differently each time? And is that enough? I don't know. Maybe it's not interesting, or maybe it's interesting to the 10 people it's interesting to, and that's enough. I don't, it's not enough to pay the bills.
I think there are a lot more than that. I actually love that analogy though, because I think that's true. I mean, as soon as I started reading Black Wave, I was like, oh, I, you know, your voice is very unique, and it's very you, right? I mean, no matter if you're writing fiction or memoir, there's that element, and right. You're considered, I mean, I don't know how many authors are like this. I think of like Miranda July and a handful of other people who are like cult authors. What do you think makes someone call you that? Is it just your following?
I don't know if it's like you seem famous yet are broke. I don't know. Like, I don't know what it means. I don't know. Is there like a person people get obsessive about? Does it trigger an obsessive enjoyment or something? Maybe. I mean, I feel like I am a cult fan of many things. So I'm like, what is it like when I like my feelings about like, I don't know, John Waters, like what makes it sort of obsessive, you know, or.
Well, this is good fodder for a future book, I think. I mean, there's something there. You're definitely multi-genre, and tonight's conversation, of course, is about memoir and memoir as, you know, being this catalyst for change, which I totally believe is true. What do you think is so unique about memoir? I mean, you said that you're always drawn to write about your life, and we can talk about that as like a compulsion or whatever, but like on a cultural level, what do you think it is about memoir that has caused it to explode in the way that it has maybe over the last 30 years?
Right. I think it is really a very pure and sweet longing for to understand humanity. Honestly, I really feel like it's wanting to understand other people's experiences, people who've lived really different lives than ours, or conversely, people who've lived lives really similar to ours, who've gone through maybe extreme things that aren't that common, or to find that you can relate to somebody who has gone through something very extreme and very different from you, but to find those common threads that editors are so great at pulling out of the work. But I really feel like it's just like, yeah, it's just wanting to connect with other people and to know what it's like to be human and to like what are people doing? You know, like I always feel like bummed that I just have one life. Like there's so many other lives I would like to have. And I feel like unless maybe you're like an actor or something, you get to embody different experiences. I think reading these books are like the closest things that we have to really getting into someone else's life, getting out of our own life and our own problems and like into somebody else's, you know?
Have there been any memoirs that you can think of? I mean, I'm totally putting you on the spot, but would you feel like really saved your life in some way?
Let me see. I really feel like, I mean, when I read Eileen Miles's book, Chelsea Girls, which is, right. It really interestingly structured. I mean, I don't even know if they call it a memoir, but I think it's safe to say, to say that, you know, that it is, you know, personal stories. And it's like, it was like a short story collection, but all the stories were true. And at the moment I found it, I was doing that kind of writing. I was writing these little vignettes about my life and these, you know, a girl that broke my heart or a party I went to. And I was like, what am I doing? You know, like, does this count? I had been writing poetry, which I understood to be a form. I kind of knew what I was doing. And then I wanted to sort of shine a light. My poems were about my life and I wanted to tell more of the story. And I just didn't know if it counted. And then I found, and I'd read Eileen's poetry and I loved Eileen Miles's poetry. And then I saw this book and it blew my mind. And I was like, wow, okay, this is like a thing. It's a genre. People are doing this. They got published. you know, I'm enjoying it. Maybe somebody would enjoy mine. It gave me a lot of hope that there was, that I could walk down this path and something would come of it, you know?
Right. So like what was maybe a breakthrough that you had in understanding the craft along the way?
I know that what's the hardest thing for me for craft is like finding a tense and staying in it. Like I kind of flip around and I think it makes editors kind of crazy. And it's very subconscious. I'm not aware that I'm doing it. I think that the hardest in working with folks I've worked with folks who write memoir a lot, and it seems like pacing is a really big thing. It's like people have a story and they just, you know, like they want to cram the whole story into an essay. And it's like, oh my God, your essay is a book. Like you can actually, you know, and what I really wanted to do is I wanted to write memoir that read like a novel, you know, and that's kind of what I try to bring out of people. And that's just personal taste, of course, but you know, that's kind of my style is to, you know, keep us in that moment. Don't be speaking from now, looking at your situation. Then
so much so. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Stay in the past. Just kind of drop in and stay there. And we don't need to hear you looking at it. Cause so often what you're doing is you're apologizing for something, you're backtracking. It shows like almost like a psychological anxiety about what you're talking about, maybe more than anything.
So I wanted to ask you about the title Against Memoir, because it's provocative in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, and it's, I think it was the Guardian that speculated like it's ironic, and you know, and I'm curious about, well, like it's kind of a two-part question. Like, number one, what were you thinking? Obviously it was an essay at the end of the book, so maybe it just stemmed from the essay and that was why you titled it, but you know, what were you thinking when you did Against Memoir? And then I'm just, in a general way, I'm wondering about whether you think memoir as a genre needs to be defended.
So the piece Against Memoir was written as a lecture, when I was a faculty at Tin House, the Tin House Summer Workshop. I was teaching memoir and then I had to give a lecture on it. And it was just at this moment when I was feeling really ambivalent about it, you know, and I was like, what am I going to say? Like, you know, normally, historically, I'm like, yeah, tell your story. People should have acted right, you know? And I just had all this bravado. And then I just was feeling differently for whatever reason. And so, that felt kind of inspiring to feel differently, you know, and to explore that. Like, what is it? What is this thing that feels like a weirdly like an addiction, you know, and where there's wreckage, but I do it anyway, you know, and I can't stop. And so it was interesting for me to kind of pursue that line of thought. And then it just was a great cheeky title for the book, you know, and which is, yeah, because the book is all memoir. They're all reported pieces. You know, when I do reported pieces, I put myself in the story because that's interesting. It's not interesting for me to pretend I'm not there. You know, it's way more interesting to be part of the story. And wait, what was the second
part? I'm just curious if you think the genre...
Does it need to be defended?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it doesn't. And I really feel like, you know, the idea that it does, and I feel like there is an idea that, you know, that it's maligned and that people have attitudes about it. It feels like there's so much misogyny in it, and there's so much sexism in it, because it's really a female genre. It's like, if a guy writes a memoir, oh my fucking God, it's like... they're Dave Eggers, you know what I mean? And like, hi Dave, I love you. But like, you know what I mean? It's, what's his face? James Frey, you know, it's like, oh, he got, even though we know that wasn't a memoir, but like there's such
celebrated.
Yeah. And it's like this idea that women are just complaining about their problems and we're crazy. And you know, fair enough. We might be, but this world has made us so. And it's a story, you know, and it's a story that's worth expressing, and it's a story that I love to hear. And so, yeah, no, I just feel like if you don't like it, don't read it. You know, there's tons of like apocalyptic Christian fiction for you there to read, or, you know, whatever you like,
you can find these days.
Yeah. But I do think it's interesting. And I think there is like veiled misogyny in it.
Yeah. Or unveiled. I mean,
unveiled. Yeah.
I mean, it's very true. I've certainly had these experiences, and recently I've been, you know, I've had a few tirades about the New York Times reviewing the people, reviewing the woman instead of her book, and the sort of the way in which they seem to be unable to separate the two, right? And and yet you're writing about your life, of course, you know, and so then people have feelings about you and not just your book. And so I'm curious, like, I think one of the fears about writing memoir is exposure. And you said, like, you wouldn't do it different. You know, it's, you put it all out there and you didn't have any fears when you were young. But I'm wondering about fears of that kind of exposure, of getting a shitty review or someone being like, oh, well, Michelle is awful, and, you know, making judgments about your character. Like, how has that been when it's happened?
That it absolutely happens. Like, Valencia's first review, for some reason, it was reviewed in the Chronicle. Well, it was one of its first reviews. It was in the San Francisco Chronicle, and they'd given it to the food writer because she was gay. And they're like, oh, you're gay. Here, review this gay book, food writer, you know, who doesn't care about literature or anything. And she just was like, we were not the same kind of gay, you know what I mean? She was horrified. She's like, Michelle called in sick to work, hungover, and didn't, she was like listing all of like the terrible things that I do or did in my 20s. And it's so absurd. It's like, who cares? I mean, you know, literature is filled with terrible characters, unreliable narrators, you know, that we fucking love. Like, don't tell me you like love Lolita and like give me a hard time about Valencia and me calling in sick to work with a fake hangover. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't. Yeah, you know, it was really interesting to write. My first fiction was Rose of No Man's Land, and it was really interesting to suddenly, you know, be writing about these girls doing all the same things that I had personally done in my memoirs, but they were fictional characters, and suddenly my writing was being discussed and not my behavior, you know? And I don't know, maybe it's too much to ask people to see beyond that. Maybe it's like, you want to put your life on display on this one hand, and then you don't want, but you somehow want to be protected from judgment in this other way. And it's, I don't know, maybe it's asking too much from people. And from people, because we are judgy creatures, you know? But, I mean, and it's true. I guess if I was reading someone's memoir and they were doing things in their memoir that were really awful to me, it would maybe, I don't know, because you could still say, I mean, I think I've read books like that, and I'm like, you can still say the writing is really great, even though I think this person is a jerk. Like, I think there's so many male writers like that, that whose work I like, in spite of the fact that I think they're monsters, you know? But yeah, I guess if you are an aspiring memoir writer, yeah, be prepared to have your life critiqued as well as your writing, possibly more so than your writing.
And it's interesting because it comes full circle. I opened with autofiction, and we'll close with autofiction because I think this will be the last question before we move to Q&A. But there's been this whole rise of autofiction, and I'm thinking of Rachel Cusk, who was a memoirist. And then she wrote this trilogy of fiction that has gotten such critical acclaim. And everyone's like, oh, she like reinvented the novel. And I read it and I was like, it's memoir.
That's how she did it. Right. Yeah.
And it is like, she has totally basically taken, I mean, it's not 100%. Like, obviously she's brilliant. I'm not trying to dismiss it, sure. But I'm saying, like, her point was that she was getting all this judgment writing memoir, and then she wrote fiction and everyone was swooning. And so there is this very interesting thing in our culture about people have feelings about memoir. So I'm curious, I guess.
Yeah. That feels like a weird class thing almost. Like, don't, like, it feels like a strange, like, it's like a more, it's like a group of morals that are coming from it feels very classed to me. Like, it's like, don't talk about money. Don't let anybody know your dirty business. Like, you know, refined.
That's the thing. Like, the maybe the reason I love memoirists is because there is a little bit of that, like, gritty, you know, we're just going to show it like it is and we're going to be okay.
Yeah. And it's so wild when people do that. I mean, no one is encouraged to do that in our culture. I don't think no one is necessarily raised to do that. The culture doesn't really want you to do that. So yeah, it is, there is a sense that every memoir is a little bit of like an outlaw story, because just to have the chutzpah to even put it out there, you're dealing with a person who is maybe a little bit singular or bold, or they're going to be an interesting character just
by their ability to maybe do that and break that rule.
Yeah, and that's perfect, because I think we memoirists need community, because they are so often in their families, people being like, why the hell are you doing this? Don't write about me. So there's just all this pushback, I think, that can happen. So it's I hope that people listening out there will feel inspired by the permission that we're trying to set up for you.
Yeah. In spite of all of how in my later... my more recent part of my career, I've been more interrogating memoir. It's only because I was writing it nonstop for like 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, I still really believe in it, in its power and its importance. And it has entertainment value, it has literary value, it has social justice value. I mean, there's just so much value to memoir.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So much so. Well, thanks, Michelle. I know we're going to move into
an honor to be in conversation with you. You're so smart and have been doing this for so long, and it's so awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And you can find the longer version of that online through the San Francisco Writers Foundation. If you just Google San Francisco Writer Foundation, Brook Warner and Michelle T, you will find it. I really appreciate the opportunity to bring Michelle T's words to you. A word about the sponsor of this event: the Writing for Change Worldwide Conference is sponsored by the San Francisco Writers Foundation, which is part of the nonprofit organization, the San Francisco Writers Conference. The San Francisco Writers Conference is actually in its 18th year of operation, and it's committed to improving literacy and supporting reading and writing throughout the country through online and on-site auctions, donations, free classes, workshops, conferences, and more. When we get back together, or when we can get back together in person, please come to the San Francisco Writers Conference. I go almost every year. Earlier this year, in February 2020, right before the world nosedived, I delivered a keynote address at the conference called Embracing Your Beautiful, Bold Publishing Dream. And it was only a few months ago, and it feels like it was 5 years ago. I so look forward to returning to this annual conference, which is amazing, and for all of you to sign up for a writer's conference the minute we can all convene together again in the way that we used to. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to Write Minded. We are a weekly podcast. Share the fact that we exist with a friend, if you will. If you loved an episode, we ask you to post about it online. We'll be forever grateful. It helps us find new listeners. Have a fabulous week. And Grant will be back with me next week.